Welcome to the Third Growth Option podcast, where we talk with business leaders and innovators hungry to drive growth that can be faster than internal organic growth and less risky than acquisition. Your moderator is Bernal Dunkerspuler, Chief Sherpa and CEO at Realign, who has led private equity-owned distributors through turnarounds and growth. With battle-proven leaders from all frontiers, we want to provoke thinking about business growth beyond conventional wisdom and binary choices.
I am Benno here with Leah Bailey, business leader of big companies and small startups. Leah, you worked your way up at well-known brands like Alberta Culver. You were president of Helen of Troy's global beauty business, CEO of Paris Presents. You have an MBA from a little school called Harvard University. Welcome to the Third Growth Option podcast. Say hello to our listeners, Leah.
Well, hi, everyone. Thank you so much for inviting me, Benno. I'm really thrilled to be here and excited to talk about my journey.
You spent most of your career in consumer products and telecommunications, and most of your employers and companies you worked for, I would call settler versus pioneer. You know, not pioneer companies, but settler companies, big established companies and industries. I'm really excited to kind of draw out the differences between working in settler companies and environments and pioneer companies. So in the last couple of years, you and one colleague became employee number one and two of a premium cannabis startup in Michigan that grew from the two of you to over 100 or I think 150 employees, right?
150, yes.
150 with you as the CEO. So you switched from that settler environment where, you know, there were thousands of employees, highly competitive, big industries where you're sort of fighting incumbent competitors at Walmart or Walgreens. And now you went into this pioneer mode, building a premium vertically integrated brand. So I really want to better understand this dynamic. And, you know, I remember back 100 years ago when I was a teenager and my parents and I moved to the States and my dad started an organic venison farm, and there really wasn't a market for $40 a pound organic venison in the 1980s, but somehow he ended up building a market and being a pioneer. So what intrigued you to become a pioneer after, you know, a very successful career as a settler?
Sure. Well, first of all, I think I've got a little pioneer throughout my career with telecom, although I went to, you know, a $1 billion company with GTE, which is now Verizon. It was right when deregulation happened. So it was going into a large company that had raised their rates by going to the regulators versus having to compete and really market. So that to me was a bit of a pioneer as well. And then right after that, I did a startup in fixed optical wireless telecom, which is translates to lasers on buildings. So I had a little bit of startup experience there too. And I think what I found throughout the companies I worked at, I really liked the ones where there was a challenge and I could go in and make a difference and learn a lot. Of course, there was two sides to that. So I always had that interest in doing something different or going into a place that was, you know, nascent industry. And I was in telecom when internet and wireless came on. So that was a pretty interesting time too. So I've always had that interest. And when this opportunity came to me, it was like so exciting because I was like, wow, I can do it again. I'm in an industry that is just growing. Of course, the challenge was I'm a marketer. So how do you brand a commodity, which I think a lot of people think of cannabis as a commodity. And I'd had that challenge, believe it or not, with cosmetic brushes at one point in my career. They said you couldn't brand them, and we created Equal Tools and Real Techniques, which have been very successful. So I think the pioneer has always been there. And this was just probably the ultimate pioneer experience.
So paint the picture at how you went from the two of you, you as the CEO and another employee, to 150. Just kind of walk us through the, you know, the milestones.
What a fun, wild ride. I mean, about 2.5 years and maybe a little bit less than that because I consulted a little bit in the beginning. So the biggest challenge we had up front was getting licensed. So nothing matters until you get the licenses. And each state in cannabis has separate licensing processes, each city, sometimes each county. So it's a very complicated regulatory side. So I ended up loving. I had been a poli sci major in college and hadn't gotten to go back to that for a while. So I really had a great time with that. And so the first challenge was to get licensed. And I will tell you, when we got the very first pre-qualification, which is what you needed in Michigan to even begin the process, it was the biggest day ever. I was so excited. We got unanimously approved, and the board was not always so easy. Major league background checks and things like that. So that was really the first step, was getting through the pre-qualification status for the state of Michigan, and then finding a place that we could actually build our properties. And so we ended up initially with a very large space in Adrian, Michigan, which is south of Ann Arbor, north of Toledo, a town that had been really decimated by the car industry. It's probably an hour plus south of Detroit, had been really hurt by the car industry going out. And so they'd lost a lot of their business. So they were excited, even though, you know, some people were like, I don't know about the smell, et cetera, but they were excited about the opportunity to bring employment to their city. So we found the spot in Adrian, Michigan, that was a green field to put our greenhouses on. And then subsequently, not too much long after, we found this incredible property in Grand Rapids, Michigan, which was automotive, everything in Michigan, a lot of automotive, 100-year-old factory, 200,000 some square feet, where we could also locate not only another indoor grow, but a dispensary. So day one, it was get the license and then try and find the properties on which we could build our operations. We also strategically said, and the reason I joined the company was that the founders wanted to create a brand. And so because we knew that, we wanted to operate really like a products company. So as a manufacturer of the product, whether it was the flower that you grew or the different products that you could do through processing. So our objective was not to be a retailer, but because we had the opportunity to have this one dispensary, and in fact had the first dispensary open in Grand Rapids, it gave us a chance to kind of on an Apple store format to extend our brand. It was all about building the brand flourish and making sure that whatever we did supported that brand image.
And what does that mean, building it, building the brand, to those who have never built a brand?
Yeah, well, first of all, you had to build the facility to make the product. So it was right. A big manufacturing operation. But building the brand was tough because, and it is tough. I mean, it's still, unfortunately, I had a wonderful, wonderful, and the company still has, head of marketing, Lindsay. And she had come from branding and big companies as well. But she'd also built a brand, RX Bar, which was not a brand that was out there. She went from Quaker to RX Bar. So she had tremendous expertise in building a brand. So I had a great, great partner on all of this. And really, she's the leader. But our objective was to say, okay, cannabis is cannabis. And when you have a situation where the demand is way higher than the supply, which is in the case in most of the more recently licensed states, it's not so true in California or Oregon or Washington or Colorado, where they've been around for a long time. But in the recently legalized states, building a brand is tough because everybody's like, I don't really care. I just want the product. And certainly people that have been using cannabis for a long time. And Michigan had really the second largest medical cannabis user population in the country because they had a caregiver system. So a lot of people had been getting the product, but they cared about THC levels, which is how much of the hallucinogen basically was in it, versus CBD, which does not have any hallucinogen. But people cared about that and price. So when you're dealing with a market that does not have enough product and people will take anything they can get, it's really tough. But what we chose to do, and it takes time. I mean, it's not done yet, but we chose to build a beautiful, I think, logo and image that, again, was started with Lindsay's design of the logo and the packaging. It really is something different. The website was just redone, so you can kind of see it there. But the dispensary is beyond anything I think most people have seen in terms of the image that it creates. And it's all about wellness, which is what Flourish stands for. And so rather than being something that's just about how much THC with the prices, it's about wellness and giving people options. And I think the other thing that the marketing team did that really helped a lot is created some very unusual products in terms of there's a beverage enhancer that's kind of like a Mio drop that you put into your liquid. They have capsules, they have pastilles. So not going just a traditional route of, we have flower, of course, we have pre-rolls, we have vape pens, but we also have products that we think go to maybe a larger audience that's looking for wellness. And they're not probably the people that are, if you're just looking for THC and price, that's not the people we're going after. We're looking at the people who are looking for more information, differentiated products, and a premium experience.
So in terms of building a brand or branding an otherwise commodity product and branding that through look and the concept of wellness, sounds a lot like the thought process that you had used in the beauty business, putting products on shelves of settler industries, right? Were there certain conventional wisdoms? That's maybe not the right word because people think of that as a negative, but were there certain assumptions about branding that you had learned in the early years of your career in settler industries that held up in this pioneer industry? And were there other assumptions that you had to throw overboard? Because were there aha moments like that?
Yeah, it's a great question. And we talked about it all the time. And it was both in marketing as well as sales was totally different than what we were used to. Again, when you're dealing with a market that is so happy to get anything they can get because there's not enough supply, you know, that's the thing that we thought, you know, immediately we could create something that, you know, create the demand. But we really had to get over the hump of the fact of the market just wants product right now. So we need to give them product and then we need to use some of those funds. It's cannabis is an extremely expensive endeavor, to say the least, to then start building the marketing around the brands. I do think that having the dispensary gave us a leg up in terms of showing what the Flourish image was about and being able to understand. It's like having, you know, your very own retailer when you're in the consumer products business and understanding what sells and what doesn't sell. So that was certainly huge. But yeah, it's totally different because it's so new that, you know, and when you're talking about hair dryers, which was my last enterprise, there's a lot of hair dryers on the market. So you're always going to try and differentiate, which I think does work in cannabis. And I think the differentiated products definitely worked. But the difference is it's not like everybody needs a hair dryer now because it's, you know, so highly saturated. This is a market that's the exact opposite. So we had to adjust our thinking to the fact that everybody wasn't waiting for us to come in with this product, that we really had to generate the demand. And working with the retailers is almost a one-on-one experience. There's some chains, but you don't go to Walmart, you don't go to Target. You for the most part, work one-on-one, both with the retailers and the consumers to try and build something. The last thing that's completely different about it is the cannabis industry, and again, state by state, has all sorts of regulations about how you can communicate with consumers. So you can use billboards, you can use email lists and things like that, but you can't do advertising in the way that we could in the consumer products industry. So I think a lot of the same principles are there, but it is a much more difficult industry because of the commodity situation, the timing, and the lack of ability to communicate in some of the ways we're all used to.
I am trying to put myself into your shoes of a, you know, an experienced marketer. You're sort of checking off all the different things on the list from, you know, immersing yourself in the licensing process, finding the real estate, getting the brand built, getting the products made. I mean, just an overwhelming amount of decisions had to be made.
Building the facilities was probably, that was maybe the biggest, yes. And building facilities, which I had not done before. So that was another challenge.
At the end, I guess everything went according to plan because you went from 2 employees to 150 employees. But something must have gone sideways along the way.
Oh, every day. Again, what I think is so much fun about this industry is that every day is different. Everything goes sideways. And then it's the challenge of working as a team to try and fix all those things that go sideways. But I think the biggest thing that's, you know, first of all, the regulatory landscape is absolutely up and down. And you really have to, you know, work through that. And some days it's good and some days it isn't. And we weren't able to get Grand Rapids initially to go adult use, which became very important in Michigan because the medical market got flooded and the pricing started going down. So, you know, each city had its challenges. But the biggest challenge is you're dealing with, you know, agriculture. So how does that plant grow? And does it grow correctly? And does it, you know, have things that come in from the outside that affect it? And the testing, what I think is so important about the legalized cannabis industry is the testing. So in order to get on the market, and again, each state has its own rules, it's very strict in terms of making sure that you don't have any things that should not be in the product, yeast and mold and all of that. And it's difficult. I mean, it's difficult to put that product on the market that has a high THC level, a high quality, looks terrific, and you make sure, because you can't use standard pesticides, everything's got to be natural, that this product also does not have anything that can be damaging to people. So what I say to people is, please, please only use legalized cannabis, because there are so many things that can go wrong with that plant, and you want to make sure that it's tested to the state testing guidelines. That makes a huge difference. But yes, I cannot tell you how many things went wrong and how many opportunities I had and challenges to try and go in a different direction.
So the branding and the marketing were not the problem. The chemistry and the legal landscape and building the facility were the bigger challenges, sounds like.
For sure. Now, listen, the brand is new. It's in its infancy. So I can't tell you that it's totally, totally been built. But no, that was not so challenging because I had a really great team who knew lots about branding and did a phenomenal job. The part that was the most difficult was really this whole thing of making sure that this plant and your product was good. Because, you know, for me in the past, I could go to Asia or wherever our product was being made and make sure that all the inputs were correct. Here was a situation where I am not an expert by any stretch of the imagination on how to grow cannabis. And then a lot of people who had grown it hadn't grown it at scale. So the whole thing of scaling up from being able to grow, I think it was 72 plants you could grow as a caregiver in Michigan to growing, you know, thousands of plants was a whole thing. So learned a lot.
What would you say was your number one lesson that you learned during your time at Flourish that you really wish you had known on day one?
Well, I think the overriding was that this is one difficult industry. From the standpoint of every single thing that we touched, whether it was the regulatory, whether it was the amount of money that's needed to, this is, again, very, very expensive to build grow facilities. But I think that probably the most important thing was, and I always say you have to know what you don't know. And I definitely did not know how to do the processing side or the growing side. So I think making sure that you have people that understand how to grow at scale and how to grow from a not a creative standpoint so much as a, although, you know, you want the creative and the new products, but it's got to be, you really have to have operators. So the growers have to be operators, the processors have to be operators, and they have to understand that this is not craft. This is a, how do you get a product that is agricultural to scale?
How did you find the operators?
You know, we worked a lot on different ideas. It's difficult. There's a lot of churn in this industry and people are definitely go in and out. Again, it's been kind of, I think, viewed in some places as an art. I do believe you have to look at the science of it as well. And so it was just a trial and error to get to the point where we really got yields up to where they needed to be. And we got processing in a way that we were efficient. But I think that it's just hard. And if anyone thinks, you know, you can grow a plant in your backyard or in your basement, no big deal to grow thousands of plants, that would be incorrect. So nope. I think I wish
Note
I knew in the
self.
Beginning how tough it was going to be. But then I might have been scared off. So I'm really glad I didn't know.
I hear you. As I'm listening to you talk about all the different challenges that a pioneer has, it reminds me that in order to do well in business, you know, it's somebody said to me many years ago, attitude isn't part of the thing. Attitude isn't most of the thing, but attitude is everything. You went into a product category that, you know, had chemistry challenges you were unfamiliar with, legal challenges that were different from hair dryers, real estate challenges that needed to be overcome, operational challenges. And it seems to me that the number one thing that made you successful in this venture was just your ability to plow through and ahead with people around you, all of whom had different skills than you.
I would say that probably the key to success, and I think Flourish is a great success. I'm very, very proud of it. I think the key was, number one, yeah, you just have to keep going. You never know what's going to hit you. And if you don't like that, that's not a good place to be then. So I love the challenge. And I think the absolute most important thing I was able to do was to build a phenomenal team. And I think that as a team, we were, and everybody had the same enthusiasm. Everyone was willing to deal with all of the challenges, including COVID. We were an essential business during COVID. So we had to keep going and keep people safe. And fortunately, as far as I know, not one person got sick, which is good when you're dealing with both a retail situation where we had to go to pick up and delivery and then a grow where clearly there's a lot of people, but we were able to keep people safe. So I'm very proud of that. But I'd say the biggest thing is having the right attitude, just having kind of a make it happen attitude with a team around you who's got that same attitude and working together.
Let's leave it right there. What I've learned here is, I mean, this has really been a story about damn the torpedoes and build a team that
who feels the same way.
Yeah. Who feels the same way. Exactly. Exactly. If folks wanted to talk to you one-on-one, how might they find you
Yes, happy to supply an email address. It's Leah, L-E-A-H, B-A-I-L-E-Y, 1212@gmail.com.
There you go. Any parting words of wisdom?
Well, if you're in Michigan, try Flourish.
Shameless plug. I love it.
Exactly. Well, I think the products are pretty great. There's a good range and high quality. And I think if it's something that you're interested in, you wouldn't be disappointed.
I love your spirit, Leah. You know, you and I have talked before recording this podcast. And, you know, I did a little bit of research on Flourish. And, you know, I jotted down, you know, different questions. But at the end of the day, it is about team building and damn the torpedoes. And that's what you have to have in order to be a pioneer. Thank you so much, Leah.
Benno, thank you very much for inviting me. It was fun chatting with you.
If you want to explore growth topics, you can find me on our website, realignforresults.com, or email Benno, B-E-N-N-O, at realignforresults.com. Thanks for listening. Until next time.
You can listen to more episodes on Apple, Spotify, or Google. We would love for you to subscribe, rate, and review it. Share it with your friends or colleagues if you enjoyed the content. Always growing.